Welcome to Music for Youth presents the Right Track podcast with me, your host, Matt Haynes. Philip Flood is my guest for this episode, the director of Sound Connections. This chat was a special one. We have our Music for Youth regional festivals coming up. You can find out more about them at www.mfy.org.uk. Please share the pod and give it a 5-star review on iTunes. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is mfy@mfy.org.uk. So welcome to the Right Track podcast. And today we have our special guest, Mr. Philip Flood. Thanks for coming on.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much for asking me to come on.
So I always like to start at the beginning. And so born in Belfast, one of my favourite cities. My partner's from Limavady. I love underlying Northern Ireland and Ireland in general. And the first guest we had on the first episode was Kiefer O'Connell from the OER Centre. So got a lot of love for that part of the world. And what she said was, in Belfast when she was growing up, music was sort of part of the fabric of the city, sort of in the walls. So I wondered, was the experience the same for you? And what are your first musical memories?
Yeah, no, it's you know, I agree with her about Belfast. Belfast is a great place, and I miss it. I miss it terribly, and you know, it's very much formed who I am. And if I think back to those early days, she's right. You know, Belfast is you know, you hear music wherever you go in Belfast, and you know, whether it's coming out of the pubs, whether it's trad sessions or marching bands. Actually, as well, it's actually seeped into the history of Northern Ireland and in many ways. And the thing is, with myself, I'm not really from a musical family. You know, both my parents were amateur singers, really, and they sang. You know, they sang in choirs at church. And my father was what you might call a lyric tenor. So that's in the 1950s and the 1960s. They'd be listening to sort of, you know, Irish singers who would be singing Italian. You know, light Italian operas, popular songs, folk songs. So I grew up within that tradition of you know, hearing song and hearing music throughout my life. And there's a great tradition in Ireland, as you may know, you know, for singing at family gatherings, you know, and everybody has got to have a party piece around that. And we all did. And so, you know, it wouldn't be unbeknownst if there was relatives around that suddenly, you know, somebody would burst into song. And that might be a sort of classic piece of music, or it might be a traditional Irish lament, or it might be something else around that. So yeah, it was steeped in that, really. And in a way, I've got two brothers who are older than me, and you know, neither of them were musicians and went on to be musicians. So I think it was a bit of, always got tremendous support from my parents, actually, about you know, going on and doing that. Becoming a musician, thought that was very important to them. At least they didn't want me to become a lawyer. You know, two doctors in the lawyer and family was pretty much standard where I come from, because they're, you know, working class background. So yeah, music was important. Although funny enough, I was at my primary school, I was taught by the Christian Brothers, and in some ways music wasn't a great priority there. And it wasn't until I got to secondary school, and tell you a bit more about that as well, that it was seen as important, because I was very lucky to go to a secondary school where music was immensely important. It was as important as Gaelic football and as important as sport generally, which is, you know, really actually set me on the course. So maybe I'll pick up on that in a bit.
Now that sort of leads me perfectly on to the next question, really, which is, so both the companies that we respectively work for, yourself for Sound Connections, myself for Music for Youth, there's a huge focus on making music accessible for young people from any background. So you've sort of touched upon there that you were encouraged from a young age, which is great to hear. But what I was also going to ask was, like, when was the light bulb moment for you growing up in terms of music's for me? This is the path for me. When did that sort of light bulb go off?
Yeah, you know, and I'd bring it back to the school days as well. Even when I was at primary school, I was always mucking around on it. We had a piano. We had this sort of Wurlitzer organ thing. It had lots of buttons on it, which was always really interesting, exciting. And I would sit there and try and pretend to play some massive organ piece and learn to read, actually taught myself to read music before I had any lessons and sort of got on and did that. And it wasn't really until I went to secondary school that I started to pick up an instrument. And so, professionally, I would be seen as a late starter. You know, so there wasn't an instrument shoved in my hand when I was six around that. And so when I got to secondary school, I really did get involved in music. And as I said, the school I went to is St. Malachy's College, and it's famous for its music and for its music department and for its music teachers. And it's produced some of Ireland's finest musicians who are still playing professionally, and they continue to playing in bands and playing in orchestras and presenting and being in the music business very broadly for the last number of years. So that was a thing, and I learned violin and I played in all the orchestras. But I also started about that time, maybe sort of 12 or 13, I was getting into the back end of punk. You know, we're talking here about the mid 70s, late 70s, coming into the early 80s, around that. So it was an immensely exciting time for music in Northern Ireland at that time. And I started two light bulb moments. Started playing bands. You know, I was fortunate to have a garage that was empty, and my parents allowed me to bring some players and colleagues in there. And we did that, and we played. We had a drum kit there and, you know, a few amps and things like that. So we started playing. And then around the same time, I got a Saturday job in a record shop in Belfast. And that was immensely exciting because it was one of the best independent record shops. It was before HMV and those sort of large ones, called Caroline Music in Belfast. And within that, all the musicians, all the bands would come in and start to, you know, put their single there, and I would be working there and getting to know them. And then I worked there for a few years. And then after that, I got a job in another record shop on a Saturday, and I did one evening a week, which is called Good Vibrations. Now, Good Vibrations is a tremendous landmark, legendary Northern Ireland record label. And I was actually folding the sleeves for Teenage Kicks, which is a single by the Undertones. So I was working there, and Fergal would come in and some of the other lads. Now, they're from Derry. They've got to be very Belfast fans and Derry bands. So I'd be working there, and then we'd be working with all of the other, and a tremendous man called Terry Hooley, who ran Good Vibrations. And he's still with us, thank God. So I was playing and gigging in bands at the same time. So I was playing with some of those bands. I played Stage B, played at the Ulster Hall, did some supporting of different acts.
Oh, cool.
Through all that time, I was seeing everything that was coming. If a band came to Belfast, they played the Ulster Hall, and you would go because you had to. There wasn't many places, but if a big band came from across the water, you would go. So, you know, The Clash, The Cure, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Banshees, as well as all of the local, you know, New Order, you know, the list. And so I grew up going to gigs, really, and I still do an awful lot of gigs at the moment. And also at that time, I suppose this was the Troubles. You know, we were in the middle of quite dangerous times. So school in the late 70s, and then I went to do music at Queen's University in the 80s. And music in many ways was a rescue. It would bring, you know, I'd end up in parts of town, whether I should have been there or not, but I'd end up in parts that I wouldn't normally be in. But I'd also be playing with musicians who, you know, were from different schools. So this sort of partisan isolation thing, music itself was actually a liberation to get to meet people and do things that you wouldn't have done otherwise. So it's so key to my life.
Yeah, I love it's got such a rich heritage of guitar bands, Northern Ireland, like Stiff Little Fingers and The Undertones and Therapy and Ash. And yeah, it's just a wealth of talent. And even like Gary Moore was born in Northern Ireland, and obviously Rory Gallagher as well, who I absolutely love. And something that's talked about a lot recently in both music education media and the printed press is, which I think is very important and maybe not talked enough about, is mentorship. And I think it can be useful at whatever age. And I was wondering, did you have a music mentor on your journey up the musical ladder, as it were? And who was that? And do you think mentorship is useful?
I certainly do. And you know, I was very lucky and fortunate to be taught by some phenomenal people in terms of my, my teachers, either my school teachers or my instrumental teachers, or whenever I played in, this is on the classical side, whenever I played in ensembles or orchestras or sang in choirs, I did a lot of singing as well. And you learn, I learned so much from them, how to behave, how to be a musician, what that could look like. But they were also fantastic at helping open doors and helping introduce me to other people around that. And so that would go from school from my wonderful music teacher, Somalicus, who's called Father Kevin McMullen, who's another legend. There's a lot of legends in Northern Ireland. So he was another one that everybody would know within the musical world, through to a tutor that I had at Queen's University, who I still see very much, called Philip Hammond, who's a very renowned composer and producer there, through to David Byers, who was producer at the BBC at that time, and was BBC Northern Ireland Music. So he produced everything that was to do with music. So there were these key people throughout my life who really helped and supported me. And what's really important with mentorship, though, is I believe a lot in peer mentoring as well. Finding, well, there's two things there. Often with the young people that we work with at Sound Connections, it's not that they want to work with and learn from somebody who's 10 years down the line. What they want is they want somebody a couple of years ahead of them who's just maybe a little bit further on that journey. So, or, other peers. So in that sort of peer mentoring relationship, I benefited a lot. That wasn't in the school system. That was in my world of working in record shops and playing in bands. You know, I'd be looking over there thinking, he or she's really interesting. I need to find out more about what they do and how they do it. And so that was a great motivating factor. And I think that idea of sort of coaching and mentoring, and, we see some wonderful programs yourselves, Music for Youth do it, us at Sound Connections do it as well, where you're just having somebody on your shoulder helping and begin that journey, and you don't, and you follow them through. You're there for them. That's a really important thing. You're present. So that's, that's been important to me, and I that's what I do now. I do quite a lot of mentoring with people at earlier stages in their careers.
That's interesting. It is certainly an important factor of sort of youth music and development. So I want to talk to you a bit about London. So when I came down to London over a decade ago now, and it still is seen as sort of the epicenter of both the music scene and music education, and there's a big push, obviously, and focus at the moment from the Arts Council to sort of that certain regions need specific focus and improvement with the arts, and I'm all for that. And I was just wondering, outside of London, which cities have you seen over the years sort of boom, and which cities and towns and regions have impressed you in recent years in terms of having a really buzzing, booming music scene?
Well, I've been in London for over 35 years now, so longer here than in Ireland, in my home. But I travel, I travel around a lot, and I'm always excited by the sort of the different musical characters of different cities and places, both in the UK and Ireland. So Dublin's been my family home since the 90s. We moved down there, partially to do with the Troubles. And so I've always loved the music scene there. I used to go a lot when I was out in Dublin, and I still go when I go back home. And there's tremendous acts that have come through Dublin, and it's some tremendous pubs and small venues. I'm all into grassroots venues, which I'll probably talk a wee bit more about as well. But look what's going on with bands like Fountains DC, absolutely
amazing.
Murder Capital as well are coming up on the back, just behind them as well. I think they're really good. Or you look at somebody like Soak, who's from Derry. The Derry music scene, very different, very small, very specific around that. Everybody, this is a thing in our, everybody knows everyone. So, a lot of these bands, even when I was working and playing, a lot of them, they all know each other. They'll all tour around together. So you get this great sense of camaraderie, and support around that. So, again, those places in Ireland, I'm still keen on. Always I'm a big Six Music fan, always listening out, seeing who's coming up and who's on the playlist with that. In terms of here in the UK and in you know, in England, really, I've always liked the Bristol scene ever since, you know, early days of Massive Attack. And I was a big Portishead fan, you know, from the beginning. And I think that's really interesting, is what's going on there. Bristol is still a great hot spot. There's always keeping an eye on who's coming out there. My partner's from Sheffield, so I've got a soft spot there, you know. And in terms of, again, you know, what's going on for me, it's all to do. It's about, as I said, it's the grassroots venues. What bands are coming out from those places? And it's normally two or three venues within a city are doing some really, whether it's Band on the Wall in Manchester, or whether it's Joiners in, you know, Southampton, or some of the Clooney, you know, seen some.
Oh, the Clooney, I love the Clooney.
Tremendous bands there in the past. You know, you keep an eye on that. Keep, you know, so, you know, where, it's sort of, you know, if I had to spend time in the city, think, okay, where's the venue? What's going on and what's happening in this place here? Now, London, as you said, we're surrounded by loads of different things, but there's still certain places I'm drawn to because of programming. And like, I live in Dalston, so I've got Cafe Oto up the road, I've got Vortex up the road, you know, I've got the Moth Club, I've got Shacklewell Arms 5 minutes walk away from here, and they're the places that I'll be drawn to just to see what's going on, see what's happening. Still important. I'm always at the back though, never down. I'm never in the mosh pit. I'm always standing at the back these days.
It's sort of the grassroots venues you were naming there. I always think there's such a lot of those venues, Clooney being a prime example, because I'm from the northeast originally. And another good one in Ireland would be the Nerve Centre in Derry. They're a big sort of community hub as well, like just people who aspire to be in music, whether it's production, whether it's behind the desk, they all hang around in those grassroots venues. So this whole push that I'm so behind, that's been happening certainly over the past few months or in year or so, with venues like the Lead Mill, which is, if that goes, it's just unthinkable really for that area. And you just think they're so important, and I hope people get behind it.
I couldn't agree more with you. Absolutely. You know, I do a lot of stuff. We do a lot of stuff with the Music Venue Trust, and Mark and Bev have been friends of mine forever. And see what they're doing and how they're supporting. And you're right, it's venues as part of the fabric of the local community. And that's been thankfully thought about more now than it has been previously. I think they're as important as art centres and concert halls and large places like the South Bank and the Barbican. I think they need to be valued for what they bring to this sense of community.
Yeah, there was a beautiful line I heard from a friend in Belfast who used to play in bands and stuff around that scene. And he used to go to the Limelight regularly to see bands. And he said he used to just go to that venue to see if it was possible. I thought, God, that's a lovely way to sort of see it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And that sort of echoes what we've just been talking about. But, and it goes back to that classic thing of, and for the, you know, for young musicians, which is what we both care about, you know, you need to see it to believe it and think it's, you know, you need to see it to think, oh, I can do that. It's possible. If you don't, it's much harder, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I want to touch on, again, a very popular sort of subject in sort of arts media at the moment is good leadership. And I do think that's a real sort of skill set that, you know, people have different approaches to. What qualities for yourself as director of Sound Connections, what qualities do you think make a good leader, and how do you go about approaching it and trying to inspire your team?
Well, I think for me, one of the main things, and that is about being authentic. I think because if you try and make things up, or if you try and be somebody who you're not, people will see through you very quickly, especially young people. Actually, they've got a sort of an X-ray vision where they can know if just somebody's putting it on and actually not really try and believe in what they're saying. So for me, it's always been you've just got to be comfortable within yourself. And it's taken me quite a while to to do that, because I don't think I was comfortable with what I did and who I was for a while. So, you know, I think that's that, and also being very open and honest about that. You know, some things about leadership is like knowing what you can do and what you're good at, but also knowing what you're not good at and what your weaknesses are. For me, that's tremendously important. And I suppose the job of some of a leader is to be able to put teams together that complement each other and that have those mix of strengths and opportunities. And I really enjoy doing that, bringing various people together. Facilitating, I think, is a really, it's always been an important word for me. I'm not a sort of a leader at the front, and I'm more of a leader who is more democratic and open in the way that I lead the team at Sound Connections and at previous organizations that I've been at. But I think I'm really proud of Sound Connections being quite a flat democratic way of working. We're toying the idea of abolishing job descriptions at the moment, you know, or job titles, you know, just because it gives a hierarchy around things. And we're really thinking about what, as an organization, what leadership looks like and who we bring in. Very keen to hear different diverse voices. I wrote about it recently with a debutant music teacher around what we're trying to do as an organization to diversify the voices and the different types of leadership within the organization. And it's all about, for me, it's about sharing power around that. And that's a very popular thing. A lot of us are thinking about that within the arts and culture more widely. I'm also at the stage of my career where I'm consciously trying to make space for others. So to give power to others and support them in careers. So I'm trying not to be on panels. I'm trying not to do keynote presentations, which for a long time I was doing, because I loved doing them. And I don't know if I had anything useful to say or not. Ask somebody else that. But where you consciously step back and therefore give a platform and promote and encourage other people to take that platform. So recently I was asked to speak to something. I said, no, I'm not going to speak, but I think this person here should speak, because they've got something really interesting to say and they're not being heard. So, you know, leadership, I suppose, it goes hand in hand with that. What can you do to facilitate others to do things is really important to me. And, you know, and we're all leaders in a sense, aren't we? So how do you help other people find the leader in themselves? That goes back to what we were chatting earlier about, to do with mentoring, isn't it? You know, there are people beautifully who've come through Sound Connections who I've had a very slight link with and helping and supporting them, who came through as a young person, who are now music programmers at major institutions, or who are now education directors, or who are producers and performers within their career as well. And it's wonderful to see that. And being at Sound Connections since 2010, I can see, you know, those people then who were 18, 19 are now, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s, and they're just doing some really interesting stuff.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's nice to hear, you know, or see the sort of inspiration that you've given these young people to sort of move forward with the musical journeys. So your daily sort of, like a typical day at Sound Connections, what challenges in your role would you face day to day? And what do you find also, what do you find inspiring about working at Sound Connections?
Yeah, two biggest challenges for me is time and money in terms of making things work. That's always. Time is the trying to find, you know, enough time in the day to do what you want to do. And even, you know, if you can be the best time management person that you can, it's always tripping you up around that. And it's dealing with deadlines, it's dealing with expectations, other people's expectations on you, what needs to be done, where is the priority within that? So it's always a juggling. I always talk about it as recalibrating. There's a sense of, okay, you've got lots of plates spinning, but which ones do you really need, you know, to maybe you can take your, you know, leave them be, which ones really, really need your attention. I remember a colleague at Youth Music was talking about this as well. And she was saying that it's about, you know, it's about taking your eye off the ball. So the most important thing is, and you, if you take your eye off the ball on something, suddenly it's gone over there and it's doing something it shouldn't do. And you think, okay, that needs a bit of attention. We need to pull that back in here and do. So there's this definite, and I'm quite good at multitasking. So I feel okay with it. And I'm also, I've got a very short concentration span. I won't spend 3 hours doing one thing. I'll be doing 10 things at the same time. And actually that's not a bad thing for my job. Because sometimes it just needs me to say yes or no to something or to spend 5 minutes sorting something out and then it can go. That's the other thing, actually, the challenge is not to be a blocker. This idea of something comes in and it sits there and it's not being dealt with, you're a blocker. How do you enable things to flow? Everything's like loggers going down a river. My job is to keep everything flowing.
I love
so
that.
That's a challenge. That's a challenge for me, but that's a really important thing. What I find inspiring, everybody I work with, it's a total privilege doing what I do. People are inspiring. What they do, how they do it, especially the young people we work with through our community network, which is called Wired for Music, you know, and so that whole idea of people coming with ideas, 90% of the time I'll say yes to those ideas. So how do you make that? But how do you make that work? That goes to the second point about money being the challenge. You know, we're a very small charity. We're like yourselves. We want to do lots, but there's never enough money to do everything you want to do. So how do we get investment as well? So a lot of my day is spent on making sure the money's okay and understanding the money. Often I say to people who are working in any organization or working on any project, if you understand the money, you understand how the thing works. So, and I'm not a big finance person, but I need to understand the figures because then I know how it works and what we can do. But yeah, that's my challenges. But again, what inspires me, who I work with every day, just phenomenal people, so privileged.
What a lovely answer. The one thing, so I think you briefly touched on diversity earlier, and so in the arts overall, I think diversity and sort of focus on sort of young people from challenging socioeconomic backgrounds, I still think in the arts overall and music, there's still plenty of road to travel with that. I think there's still improvements to be made. What improvements would you like to see be made, and have you seen it develop over recent years?
I think I have seen things develop over recent years, and this is around either, you know, pathways into the music industry or pathways into music education. Around that, I still think we have a problem with the lack of diversity in the music industry and in music education. I think that diversity cuts across ethnicity and socioeconomic, across disability. And other protected characteristics, I think, and we do. We're doing what we can within Sound Connections to address that. And the recent UK Music report on discrimination within the industry is absolutely shocking. And we're working with a number of organisations, including Black Lives in Music, to try and address that and become part of the solution and not the problem. And that includes within our own team. We're very conscious that our senior management team are all white, and we are looking at ways at how we can diversify the that area of our own organisation. Where we tend to put our own resources and our own strengths is around bringing young people into music education and into the industry who are underrepresented. And so that comes through Wired for Music, which is our youth network of young Londoners aged 16 to 25. About 60% of those are from Black and minority ethnic backgrounds. Around 80% are young women who, again, are underrepresented within the music industry. And so we have investment programs and opportunities to support them specifically in their early career opportunities and the moves that we can do that. And we've been working with Youth Music They've got their next gen scheme, which is similar to some of the work that we do around that. So it's looking at jobs and careers beyond the stage and getting young people in there. And there's other fantastic organisations who are doing this. We're not alone in this. You know, Small Green Shoots, London organisation, very involved in the industry for a number of years. Performing Rights Society Foundation have had a number of initiatives about getting women in music, around developing other underrepresentation. I've just seen Music Managers Forum, MMF, are doing work within this as well. The important thing is that we all need to join up. We need to talk to each other. We don't need to duplicate what we're doing. We need to play to everybody's strengths, and we need to be supportive of all of that. And real, and you know, and by the sum of the parts, the totality means that, you know, we can start to make some differences, which there are, you know, things are. People are much more conscious. And we're working with other organizations, music education hubs, cultural organizations at governance level. So I'm really keen. How do we get young people heard at the very, very highest level in organizations? So that's through youth advisory boards, it's through young trustees. So we have young trustees on at Sound Connections, and we've worked with other organizations to get, and by young I mean 20, up to 25, maybe up to 30, around that, but 25 is our sort of area. So how do we enable young people to have a voice? They've got a voice, actually. How do you enable that their voices are heard? That, for me, that's the key thing.
A big part of Sound Connections is the training and professional development for tutors, creative practitioners, and producers. What qualities do you think make a great music teacher?
Well, we've spent a long time training and supporting, you know, music teachers, music leaders, practitioners, producers around that. And very much, I think, at the core of it comes back to, and we're really, really more interested now than ever, is how can we work with them to ensure that they're inclusive in their approach to what they do? How do you be an inclusive music practitioner? And what are the qualities and the attributes that you need to do that? Because I think if you can understand that, I think then you're beginning. So we're not about teaching people how to conduct or play an instrument or how to run Cubase around that. Somebody else can do that. We're interested in how we professionalize people themselves, you know, within their behaviors and their values. So we're doing a lot of work around values. So things like being empathetic, having an ability to listen, being responsive, giving space for other people to grow, giving, you know, in a one-to-one instrumental lesson or a small group, how do you hear the voice of the person that you're teaching? So, like, and I mean really hear, so that you're not just working your way through tune a day or whatever it is that you're learning at the time. So I think, you know, it's about these qualities and attributes, being very self-aware, I think, understanding how people learn. It's also really helpful. So I'm not putting pedagogy away. I think actually, if you're a teacher, you really need to understand what the building blocks of learning are and what teaching and learning means. So we're very fortunate to work with some fantastic academics, some brilliant teachers who are very good at modeling behavior and can help and support those maybe at the beginnings of their careers to do that. And also giving them opportunities to shadow, you know, those the attributes is, some of it is around that peer learning, you know, some of that idea of almost as an apprenticeship, so that people at the beginnings of their careers can learn from those who are a little bit more experienced than they are, and try things out in an environment where they feel as though that they can, you know, they can make mistakes and they can learn from that. That's sort of our position within that world.
Yeah, the listening's a big, and empathy is a, that's a great point as well. We were very pleased to have you along to our proms at the Royal Albert Hall, the Music for Youth proms. I'm sure the team would love me to ask you, did you enjoy it, and which acts did you enjoy on the night that you attended?
Well, I've been going there quite a few years, and was there on second night recently. So that was a particularly what I thought of a particularly celebratory showcase type of event, and so it was fantastic again, as always, to see the breadth and the variety of organizations, of schools, community organizations, of young people, styles and genres of music. So I thought it was, you know, as always, an incredible and such a vital and important event. You know, if you're asking me for standouts, well, the evening that I was there, the City of Belfast Youth Orchestra played, and that capitulated me, catapulted me right back into being 16, sitting at the back of the second violins, scraping away in, you know, in similar youth orchestras, either within Belfast or within my school area. What was also very special, though, is that the conductor of the City of Belfast Youth Orchestra is Paul McBride. Now, Paul McBride has a number of claims to fame. First, he was the year below me at school at Stalagies. Right. And I saw him before the concert, before the game, and we had a bit of a catch-up. So he was the year below me at school. He's now the principal of the school that we went to. God forbid, imagine going to school and then you become the head teacher. I couldn't do it. I could not, but he can. He's doing it. But he's also a phenomenal musician and a phenomenal conductor. And so actually looking at those young people and seeing, you know, that was me 30, 40 years ago, you know, at least. So, you know, that was tremendous. Really enjoyed that. I love the Frequency artists. I think Frequency is a great program. There was no tricks that evening. And then there's another connection there. I know the drummer, Louis.
Oh, right.
Who is phenomenal. I know his mother, actually, who is a primary school teacher, but used to work within music education more broadly. And I've seen him, you know, grow and develop the last few years. But actually, that band, they're all such technicians. And they did about four songs with various people coming on, doing various different styles. And, you know, technically they were astonishing. They remind me of like Black Midi or Squid in just this facility to be able to switch to something so quickly. And then finally, I think Spit Game, who closed the show, you know, again, an organization I've been following for a while, this wonderful sort of rap and urban based music, but in total control, so professional and authentic in what they do. It was just off the scale.
Oh, that's good to hear. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I was just wondering, what's the best piece of advice you've been given in your music career?
The best piece of advice is, it's one I pass on, actually. A few people have said it to me. It kept coming up. It's about be curious. Actually, is for me, if I had to put one thing up on the wall, it would be that. Be curious. Because if you lose that curiosity in things, then I think you just lose something very vital around that. So, you know, always think about what more is there to find out here. Be interested. If you're not, you know, and if you're not interested, don't bother. Do something else. But try and keep that curiosity going. And I think you do need to work on it in yourself as well. You need to find things. I get bored quite easily. This is the other thing. I'll do something, play with it for a wee bit over there, like a project. And as soon as I've got it all set up, I'm going to give it to somebody else because they can like sort that out. I love the beginning bits and getting those things started. So I said, be curious. The other thing I was being told, sort of, if you can say yes, then do, because you don't know where that might lead. That doesn't mean like, you know, always say yes, but like if there's a thing of saying, yeah, I'll have a go at that. So it's about be there, be present, because you never know what might happen. So those are the two things, I think.
Well, thank you very much, Philip, for the interview, and I hope to see you in person soon.
That's grand. It's been an absolute delight speaking with you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thanks a lot. Bye now.